Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Hi, everyone. It's your host, Tim Rutten here. Today, I wanted to share a very special podcast episode with you, a panel called AI in Banking, Scaling Innovation, Driving Growth, and Enhancing Operations. At a recent conference in the US, I spoke with the experts from Accenture, McKinsey, and Microsoft about how banks can overcome implementation hurdles and seize the serious opportunity that AI presents. Let's jump right in.
So we're going to have a panel here on scaling AI. And there's a lot of words on the, let's say, title of the session, but we're going to break it down. We're going to make it simple. We're going to make it pragmatic as much as we can. We're also going to discuss the major topics that potentially keep you up at night at this moment in time when it comes to AI. Let me first introduce the panel members. We have Brian here. Maybe you can introduce yourself.
Hi, Brian Schneiderman. I lead Accenture's North American Payments Practice.
And we have Kathleen.
I'm Kathleen Woodard. I am the head of banking for the industry advisory team covering the Americas at Microsoft. I am an ex-26-year banker. Just need to get out there.
There we go. And then we have Larry.
Hi, good morning. Larry Lerner. I'm a partner with McKinsey, and I lead our global banking and securities analytics practice. And like Kathleen, I'm a recovering banker. Spent many years at Capital One Bank leading their data and their analytics teams.
Cool. Now we're going to start with a statistic because that's how these panels work. But the fun thing is we're going to try and figure out which company of these three individuals brought that statistic to the world. Yeah? Let's pay attention. AI alone could unlock $200 billion to $340 billion in annual value globally, with the US being poised to lead in productivity gains.
Who's voting?
Yeah, exactly.
So nobody knows. Yeah, it is McKinsey. So that's you guys. So in essence, this is, of course, the pivotal change in the market. That's also why we made the move as Backbase. And maybe to start things off, Kathleen, where are we as an industry in understanding the opportunity of AI? Because it is a container term, and there's a lot of maybe also unclarity on what it really is and how you make progress and unpack it.
Yeah, it's a perfect question to start, because I know even from the last day where, you know, exciting announcements here at Backbase, but even in having conversations, I think there's just such a wide dispersion of understanding of what we're talking about. And obviously, for all of you that have been in banks for a very long time, you're very familiar with machine learning and traditional AI. So maybe just to kind of level set for the room, to take a step back. So obviously, November 2022, ChatGPT launches. And you know, quite frankly, when we were bringing folks into the Microsoft Teams and into our centers and having conversations about just how revolutionary this was, many of the customers were kind of responding with, that's interesting. You know, I could see how I could do maybe some birthday messages or birthday cards with that, but I don't think it's going to be relevant in banking. And then about 4 months later, and this is the time you will probably all be familiar when ChatGPT got locked down in your accounts. Then we had people coming into our centers, and the response was, I think AI is going to kill us all. We are all going to die. And so it was you know, quite serious. You fast forward to today, and it is a very, very different situation, because what we have is people coming in, banks coming in, talking to us with a lot of use cases and a lot of ideas about what they're going to do. And so what we saw, particularly in the Americas, the area that I cover, is that most of how people are thinking about generative AI was really focused on those applications within the organization. Obviously, it makes sense. They're lower risk. It's easier to kind of understand what are the implications. And so we had a lot of internal use-focused use cases. The next wave was more external client-facing. And I know my colleagues can talk about, you know, what we're seeing globally, but we have not seen a lot of usage of generative AI externally with clients. Contact centers is one of the ones that we're starting to see that more. But what has changed, and what I think everybody needs to level set on, is that in the last, call it 4 months, there have been very seismic shifts. The first one is that some of these large language models, these new reasoning models, are incredibly powerful. And so if you experimented with ChatGPT a while ago, it was, you know, hallucinations you had, you know, wasn't good at math, wasn't good at quantitative reasoning. The models now are incredibly complex and sophisticated, and they can provide PhD level reasoning with the right kind of prompts and the right kind of data. And so what that means is that we are not at AGI, artificial general intelligence, but we are at a place where you can democratize intelligence, which means that you can have very, very sophisticated reasoning applied to your business in a way that has never been done before. That means it's also multimodal, meaning that it can recognize images. It's very, very advanced. And some of these models have just come out in the last few months, and it's really transforming the industry. The second thing that has changed in such a substantial way, we're all using the word agentic. Agentic is the word of 2025. We're all excited about agentic AI. But it is a big deal because these autonomous agents, what is different is that they can actually use these sophisticated models and they can take action independently. A human can give direction to them, but they will act autonomously to be able to think about with a chain of thought the steps and the reasoning that needs to happen in order to get the outcome. And it will choose the right path without humans doing that. And because of the sophistication level, it is really, really transformative. So I would just say every conversation that I'm having now with banks are all about agentic AI. How is this going to transform banking? And I know, you know, we've got a lot to talk about, but just the one thing I will say to everybody in this room, because there's some folks that are really on top of it. You guys are thinking about how this is going to apply within your own context. But I also know that there's some of you that perhaps it's not part of your mandate and not something that you're thinking about very deeply. I think that everybody is going to have to start thinking about it.
It's great. I want to add, and by the way, congratulations to Microsoft. They had some major announcements in AI just in the last 48 hours, and there's more, you know, coming out, it seems like, every minute with MasterCard. And payments is an area where AI is really happening, is at the sort of the cutting edge, and hence MasterCard's announcement with Microsoft. I want to bring home a little bit about what you just said, because for the last 3 years, there is an example that should resonate with everybody, retries for failed payments. So when a payment is attempted and it doesn't go through, the transaction retries now use an AI engine, and there's several of them out there, to determine what's changed. Should I try a different time of day? Should I try a different day of the week? All sorts of factors. And not only the known, but it's learning those unknowns that are changing and doing those retries and then applying it to all the other merchants. And so here's a really good example of where it's actually being used today. It's actually making decisions and working today to benefit merchants through solutions provided by the banks.
Yep.
Maybe I'll add one thing, just given the audience. This is not a game for the big banks only anymore. As I've seen over the last 18 months, sort of the space evolve, one of the things that has given me the most inspiration is what some of the institutions, call it below 50 billion in assets, are doing globally. This is not just in the US, and to what extent they're able to leapfrog institutions that are quite a bit larger. This is no longer the realm of you need to have $100 million, you know, dollar budget, you know, to really re-platform. You could actually get started pretty quickly and get benefits fairly effectively without having to have the scale of a very large institution. So as you're thinking about this, for your own institution, just recognize that this is quite attainable. And this is quite achievable in a relatively short period of time once you get the right foundations in place.
Yeah. So Larry, if I may build on top of that, what is holding banks and credit unions alike back to really step in and make progress? What are you observing?
We had a roundtable last week, and everybody has read Jamie Dimon's shareholder letter last year, where he famously said that they were going to deliver $2 billion of value from AI alone. And in speaking with them last week at a roundtable, you know, they confirmed what we, I think, all knew, which is the vast majority of that benefit is still geared towards traditional AI and machine learning. So the reality is that we're just only beginning to see the real impact from Gen AI and agentic AI, and it's going to continue to deliver benefits in the future. So let's recognize that we're still early innings, but given that we are seeing a massive shift between the front-running institutions that are actually beginning to embed these solutions into production and are beginning to monitor the impact versus everybody else, right? And we see that is roughly 10 to 15% of the institutions that we work with is what we would call truly leading the pack, right? And so there's a few common denominators of the ones that are not getting to that level of scale that I think are important to recognize. Number one, they're sort of leading from the middle, right? One of the things that Kathleen said earlier is you need to have a very unified, strong vision from the top. But when you look at the top contenders, you know, depending on which rankings you look at, every one of them has a very visible and vocal CEO, CFO, CMO. They're leading from the top, and they're establishing a very bold AI-enabled vision. They're envisioning, you know, how the bank is going to operate through AI enablement rather than looking at sort of individual use cases. So the second common failure point is institutions that are trying to let 1,000 flowers bloom. They will pick one example in customer service. They might pick one example in fraud. They might pick one example in customer acquisition. But they're not going to really stitch it together in a way that can deliver sustained value. Conversely, what we've seen is the institutions that are getting it well, that are doing it well, are actually reducing the scope of where they're making their big bets. We call them domains. You can call them functions. But they're picking the two or three top domains within their organization, and every bank is different. One domain may be collections, one domain might be service ops, one domain might be engineering. And they're going very deep in those domains across multiple use cases. When you think about reimagining service ops, for example, customer service, it's not just one copilot that you have to launch. It's a number of use cases that build on one another. So they're going, you know, narrow in scope, but very deep in execution. And then I think the third important aspect that is holding some of these banks back is a lack of appreciation of what it takes to really scale adoption from within. I'll give you a very embarrassing statistic from McKinsey, which is very much alive and well in banks. We launched 2 years ago. We launched, I think, what I would say, one of the world's best knowledge engines. You know, imagine the collective wisdom that we've gathered over 100 years. We've actually made that accessible, you know, through the fingertips, you know, to all of our consultants. Took us about 4.5-5 months to build this incredible tool. It's taken us over 18 months to get 65% of our consultants to use it. And so most institutions underestimate the change management and the investment in sort of culture and operating model and governance that's going to enable them, once they develop these solutions, to get them to scale internally and to get the adoption up and running. So maybe those are maybe some, and I'm sure you guys have seen others.
Yeah, I'm going to add one other. So we polled about 360 some odd banks, what was holding them back. And by far, the biggest thing that we found at Accenture was technical debt. Technical debt should be, the number should be at about 15%. You should be spending 15% of your IT budget on your legacy systems. The average is 30 to 60, depending upon the type of institution. Now, there's a lot of smaller institutions relatively in here. But you're dependent on organizations, very, very large organizations that provide solutions to you who have massive technical debt. Some of them are going through mergers and acquisitions now, which makes it even more problematic. Dozens of platforms never consolidated. In comes these new fintechs that are using generative AI to not only go back and extract requirements from old solutions, old systems, but with a 70% effectiveness rate, but they're actually starting to refactor and recode. And will these big, the largest banks and processors be able to do that quickly enough to catch up with what these new fintechs are doing? And you're dependent on some of these sort of dinosaurs out there that have been so important to our industry. And they need to start using these solutions to do those kinds of readiness. But technical debt is a big inhibitor.
Now, that brings me to the next question, which is, where do we really see value today in production-grade quality that is really scaled across an enterprise in the context of banking? What are the use cases that you guys really see at large? I think, Kathleen, you're happy to comment.
Sure, I will. And maybe I'll start off with Microsoft, because we are customer zero. And so Microsoft is obviously an organization that we are investing very heavily. I know you guys have seen the $80 billion number. This is our big bet. AI is the way of the future, and everything in the organization is focused on AI. And, you know, just to add to the top-down leadership comment, when this all happened, Satya Nadella came out to his leadership team and said, okay, everybody needs to shift. You need to redesign your product roadmap that you guys have all loved so much and worked on for the last 18 months, and everything needs to be infused with AI. Now come back in 2 weeks and tell me how that roadmap looks like. And people were not so crazy about that, but they came back and he looked at them and said, nope, not bold enough. And it really needs to be infused. And so if the process, I think you guys would have seen Shopify CEO has now said that unless the process cannot be done with AI, that's the only way that they will get funding. And so it's pretty clear there. Just a few examples I'll share just in terms of Microsoft, though. We have launched our Copilot, which is every employee in the organization has their own personal agent, their own personal assistant. And, you know, that wasn't a given. There's a cost to that. And so in watching those numbers, just one stat that's very obvious is when we look at, and it's tracked very, very closely, we've seen a 23% increase in terms of pipeline. We've seen a 9% increase in share of revenue for each salesperson. 9% might not seem like a huge number, but on a $200 billion business, it is significant. Yeah. And that is against their own baseline. That's not against lower performers. That is individuals without Copilot. They then get Copilot, and it does take adoption and change management, but we're seeing an increase. Another example, obviously employee experience is one thing, but customer experience and how you're reinventing the customer experience is significant. Microsoft has one of the largest contact centers. We're in 190 countries. We have 45,000 employees. We started to introduce now an agent, a generative AI agent that triages every inbound call. And, you know, if they're 99% sure that they've seen this signal before, the answer will be provided to the person who's answering the phone and it's all good. If it is not there, if it's not been seen before, it is automatically routed to the most senior engineer. They're given a Copilot assistant, and that assistant, that agent, Copilot agent, is automatically looking up all of the databases, trying to look up all of the information to be able to provide that answer. And what we're seeing is that it's not just about answering the question faster. It is then being able to do, at the same time, root cause analysis, being able to update all of the now knowledge sources, because it's a new problem that's been seen, and now we're creating the content to address it for the next person. Microsoft this year, this is a public statement, so can share it. Microsoft this year is going to be booking $450 million of savings from introducing this.
Nice starting point. As much as I like the answer, I'd like to flip it back to in the context of banking to see if there's a vertical set of examples that maybe you see in the field as well, Larry.
I would say that there's no shortage of inspiration of where these ideas are coming from. We are, I mentioned this concept of domains earlier. You know, your typical retail bank has maybe 25 domains. The number's not 100. And within those domains, you've got a few hundred use cases. And we're seeing activity across the board. So let me just start by saying there is no one domain that always dominates. But where we're seeing the most momentum, just in terms of volume, that we're seeing sort of production level, I would start first where Brian started earlier, software acceleration. Coding acceleration, software acceleration, all kinds of co-pilots. I mean, that's really where some of this really starts in most institutions. It's very safe to do it. You're not really dealing with a lot of privacy and customer data. So most institutions, I think, are well underway on the engineering side. We're seeing it also in the relationship management side. So, you know, RM enablement, particularly on the commercial side. Kathleen talked about service ops and call center. You know, that's a, you know, ripe for reimagination. How do you divert 20% of your calls to, you know, autonomous agents and things like that? So those are the ones that you always read about, and we're absolutely seeing a lot of momentum there. A few areas that we're beginning to see more and more volume: internal functions like risk and regulatory. We're seeing leading banks try to figure out, where is it in my internal operations where I have highly manual and tactical processes? Think about the writing of a credit memo. You know, we've seen clients go from 1 or 2 weeks to get a credit memo out to like a day with the use of these agents that Kathleen talked about earlier. Think about risk and regulatory. So we're beginning to see applications go very deep into highly, highly manual functional areas that are fairly complex. So that's exciting. And then finally, in other regions, we're actually not seeing a lot of this in North America yet, but in other regions, in South America, in the Middle East, parts of Asia, we're actually seeing the technology go and start touching customers through hyper-personalization. So imagine if you have a bank and you've already got a number of great propensity models helping you figure out what is the next best product to offer a customer, through which channel, at what time of day, through, you know, what message. And then the generative AI overlay on top of that is actually delivering the right message, worded very personally based on the context that the bank knows about the specific client. I think in North America, we're still not there yet in terms of the banks being very comfortable starting to actually touch customers, but we're beginning to see it in other regions. And I would suspect that as those models get proven out in production, you know, in other large institutions, we're going to begin to see more of that in the US.
Let me throw a number at that. So we have customers that range in regulatory reporting from 10,000 person hours a year to the largest one, 200,000 person hours a year, doing regulatory reporting. A lot of times that same report has to be resubmitted 5 to 10 times. That's all being automated. It's a great example, and it's a safe area to do it. It's, you know, in-house. It's not, you know, something that's touching directly the customers.
Yeah. And maybe moving back to how we actually bring this to life responsibly. That's one of the topics that we now typically hear about. How do we scale AI with all the illities? I think you had a good view on that when we were preparing, Brian.
Yeah, so one of the first things that I recommend, and I think it applies to just about everybody here, is to set up an AI risk office. We have ALCOs, we have, you know, managed risk and underwriting very well in a lot of these institutions. We don't really have an AI risk office. It is a different beast. And there are things that must be included in there. One of them is traceability. Where is this information coming from? Especially if you're using third-party providers. Third-party risk management is not prepared as a function or a process to manage AI. Jamie Dimon actually released a letter in the last 48 or 72 hours about this. He's very concerned about it. Knowing where your data is coming from, knowing how you should be using that, and explainability. Because we will see increased scrutiny on how that data is being used and being able to explain whether that data was used to potentially harm somebody inadvertently or, you know, for profit. I think there is a lot of things that this risk office function needs to do. So I call it the ILITES because traceability and explainability are critical. Of course, agility is the big one because this will give us a lot of agility, but it comes with a lot of risk if we don't stand up an appropriate risk office with all the data feeds and monitoring that need to happen. Now, one other thing we talked about in preparing for this, I think my prognostication is that's a lot of work and a lot of data to audit and analyze. I think we'll see the emergence of third parties to come in and help manage and audit all of that AI data for us, I hope. Maybe we'll do it. I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe I would just add one thing to what Brian said. We're in a very interesting time, where I think the direction of travel is that regulations might be decreasing instead of increasing, at least in North America. And what we're seeing, interestingly, is this emergence of self-governance. Institutions are not pulling back from governing their own deployment of AI responsibly. And so irrespective of where the direction of travel ends up going from an actual regulatory and compliance perspective in North America, you know, I would really encourage all of you to set your own guardrails and your own sort of high bar. Because over time, you know, to Brian's point, you have to really be on the front foot when it comes to, you know, understanding where the data is coming from, understanding to what extent, you know, the way you're using it is going to ultimately be compliant. And so just recognize that for some time, you might have to establish your own higher bars from a self-governance perspective. But in other regions, I think, you're seeing a pretty clear direction of where banks need to be in terms of those high bars.
And the pendulum will swing in a few years, and it'll swing hard with a sharp edge. Regulators look backwards. They don't just look at what's happening in the moment. They'll go back and see what happened and make their decisions on that. We've seen that numerous times. So good advice, caution.
Yeah, I would just also add in though, this is an incredibly important topic. It's probably one of the most important things as you're thinking about deploying AI and how to do it safely and responsibly. All of the cloud providers are building this into the platform. Like that is fundamental to be able to scale out at the enterprise level, which is, you know, everybody wants to do that. But the large providers are putting, as Microsoft is, a lot of resources into responsible AI, the tools, the governance, to be able to have the kind of traceability, to have the reporting that's going to be necessary. So working with the cloud provider is one thing. The second thing, I'm just going to take a small little plug, I think is really important that we also help our risk teams within the banks also get educated, because I completely agree with the comment around self-governance, but self-governance cannot be a reason to not actually explore it at all, because that's actually a risk to the business. And so I do think that there is that middle ground there. If anybody's interested, if any of you want your chief risk officer, or your compliance or your CISO or privacy officer, Microsoft is hosting in DC in a couple weeks. A number of regulators from the FDIC and from the US Treasury and the Fed, along with the bank risk teams. Because we want to facilitate a dialogue, because there is a certain degree of education that needs to happen for the regulators, as well as for the risk departments within the bank. So if any of you would like to get an invite, please ping me or find me afterwards, and I will make sure that you get the
invite. It's a nice invite. Also coming on top of that, in one of the podcast episodes yesterday, I think it was with Christine Martin from Everbank, we discussed that if you want to embrace this change now appropriately, you need to get all the players in the room starting at day zero, which includes compliance, which includes finance, legal, all the business support functions that you have, so that you're in the boat together. Because typically what you see, they're at the end of the value chain, they then get the request to, you know, sign off on this or do a quick review. But if they don't have the right mindset or the right starting point to begin with, yeah, it's not going to fly as easily as you would like. And again, it's time to act now, right? So you don't have weeks, months, quarters of time to figure this out internally. Which brings me to another point that you and I also discussed on the podcast. The timing is changing. So where you would typically think in quarters, half years, maybe years of planning, it is changing. What was the perspective that you shared there?
Well, I think that around AI, your planning needs to be quarters, not years. And it worries me, particularly as we tie it back to training. I think our organizations, all of our organizations, including ours at Accenture with almost 1 million people, are going to go from being pyramids, right? Senior people making decisions at the top, lots of junior people at the bottom, to being very squished diamonds. I think we're going to have fewer people, certainly coding and testing and doing a lot of the reporting and things we've talked about at the bottom. We're going to have fewer leaders because we're going to be able to make decisions more efficiently with fewer people involved. And in the middle is going to be this group of people who've learned to use AI and manage departments of agents. We're not ready for that. This is coming faster than we can train those people and retrain people. It's a societal problem, but it's not going to be measured in progress over the course of the next year, 2 years, 3 years like we're used to. We've got to be making progress against things, beginning with training and education in quarters. That it's a big, big concern of mine.
Yeah. Any of you from the McKinsey side on this?
Yeah, I could not agree more with Brian. I wouldn't say the majority, but a good portion of the work that we're doing today with our clients as we are helping them through these transformation programs is on capability building. And it's not just at the technical levels. We are finding that there is a real gap at the senior most level of the organizations to really even understand what it means to rewire a bank, to really be AI first or AI forward. So definitely think that that capability building from within has to be central to this bold vision that you establish. And I also think that as you deploy capabilities and as you deploy solutions, that you form fit your capability building based on what you're deploying. You know, we've seen way too many institutions get ahead of their skis very early in terms of, you know, let's train, you know, 5,000 people today on theoretical concepts, but not deploy anything for the next 6 months. Well, by the time you end up deploying things, you're not going to have the right resourcing or the right skilling. So manage your upskilling as you're actually deploying solutions and use that as the means to actually build the muscles rather than front loading it into, you know, into some program that then just becomes, you know, a shiny object that you put on the shelf. So make sure that you're embedding it as part of the strategic roadmap rather than as individual parts separate from it.
Elephant in the room, at least half a year ago to a year ago. Will this replace people, yes or no? I hear you saying you've got 1 million people, let's say give or take, in Accenture. Will you still have 1 million people in a year from now?
Well, if we have 1 million people, they're going to be doing very different things. And the things that they're doing today, they're going to be doing very differently. So I can tell you, we can create a proposal in minutes that used to take a week or two, right? Including all the research, including all the graphics. So the question I think is, how do we retrain people either to do what they're doing faster, better, cheaper, which will benefit all of our clients, or to do new things? I do think sort of the creative logic side of what we do as consultants is going to increase and need to increase. So these models are going to be very limited with what they can do from a creativity standpoint. And at the end of the day, coming up with ideas like how you bundle products to meet new consumer behaviors and preferences, like during a potential recession or whatnot, models aren't going to be able to do those kinds of things. That's the kind of creative work. But it's not going to happen at the bottom of the pyramid. It's going to happen at the middle. And that's where we can really retrain our people to be creative, use tools to be better, faster, cheaper. That's where we've got to go. I would hate to see us become a society where we just shed all these people. We need to be investing in them. And back to the other comment, we need to do it now.
I would just totally agree. I would add in what we are seeing is actually not a lot of quiet conversations about how can we use this to cut a ton of people. That's not the conversations that we're hearing right now. And in fact, our own Microsoft experience is not that. It is really about how do you maintain a flat employee base while you are growing, right? And so it really is about doing more with the same or even less. And so a big part of the philosophy that we're seeing is this idea of constraining the budgets, constraining the FTE, so that you can actually force people to really think about how are we going to use AI now to grow, and finding even unlocks of you know, greater innovation, greater opportunities. That's a lot of the conversations that we're hearing right now.
Yeah.
I would agree with Kathleen. It's more around bending the future cost curve. I don't know of any single institution that has announced, you know, massive layoffs, you know, in banking, at least yet. And rightfully so. You know, I don't think today that's the objective. I think it's more of a, you know, when we think about efficiency metrics, it's more about throughput. Whether it's, you know, more calls, you know, per given call center staffing model, more clients served per RM, you end up looking at those throughput metrics more than you're looking at headcount metrics. Now, does that mean that no function is going to be reduced? Like, I'm sure some will. But the overwhelming, at least today, the overwhelming trend is that it's not about cutting seats as much as it is about better enabling your people to have a more fulfilling job, right? So, you know, the less time you spend doing the very tactical and technical work, the more time you have time, you know, to speak with your clients, to be more creative. And that's what we're seeing now. 5 years from now, it's possible that the DNA structure of a bank is going to change quite drastically. But I don't think it's going to be because you're going to all of a sudden have one person for every 10 people that you have today. The jobs themselves are going to, I think, shift pretty massively.
Yeah. I would also say that in today's context, I'm fully with you all. But if I look at the rate of change that we've seen over the past months and the instability in the world, I think the conversation might change dramatically if we indeed hit a global recession at one point in time. And all of a sudden, the, let's say, flow of profits, you know, dampens to a degree, and you might get different, let's say, trade-offs when it comes to how do you apply AI across the board to still drive profitability in the new model. So I think in 3 months, we might have a different conversation here, maybe in six, maybe not. I hope so. But definitely you have the levers to play with.
We can come back next year and do the same conversation.
You will, yeah, for sure. Then we go to the final question, guys. As Backbase, at least from my standpoint, we always try to make things practical. So maybe there's one thing per attendee here that you would say towards the audience, bring that home, that is something that you could execute on starting Monday. What would you share with the audience to bring home as an action, like something that they could really pick up?
Yeah.
Your advice, if I may.
For those of you that haven't quite set your bold vision yet, that's step number one, is define where in your particular institution you have the biggest value pockets that you can start addressing today. And typically, the first ones that I tend to see in sort of smaller and mid-sized banks are somewhere in the service ops arena, whether it's call center, whether it's internal ops, but there is a plethora of opportunities that are, I think, ripe for executing. But really have a frank talk with your top team to make sure that this becomes a central pillar of your go-forward strategy. And you don't need months and years to start. You need a few weeks to get going, and it's typically a fairly agile journey that you then start undertaking.
A bold vision. Kathleen?
I'm going to take it in a different direction because I'm going to make it very real. I really believe everybody in this room, you're here at this conference because you're already successful in the domain, that in your banks, you're interested and engaged. I think one of the most important things you can do individually is make sure that you are actually using this technology every single day. And so, you know, it doesn't matter which platform. Copilot is free. You can download it. You can use ChatGPT, whatever. But find a way to actually start using this, because the ability for you In the future, I do not believe that there's going to be as many specialists, because the specialists are going to be, I think, down the road, replaced by agents who can do and have the domain knowledge and do certain tasks significantly faster, more accurately. And so some of us have grown up in the bank with a lot of domain knowledge, and you know, part of the calling card becomes that we've been in the institution, we understand how things work, and that's one thing. But I think what is actually more valuable is that creativity, the knowledge that you have, and that humanity to be able to be, as a generalist, educated and being able to apply this. And so using this to actually learn and to grow, I am a huge believer that it's one of the things that's going to propel each one of you, because some of you may not be able to, you know, necessarily get the CEO to, you know, strike that bold vision and then start to look at implementing it. But I think actually starting to play with this technology to understand how you can quickly get educated in an entire realm of topics, it's very, very powerful. So that's my...
So basically get started and play with ChatGPT, Perplexity, and so forth. I think what is also really cool, you can ask ChatGPT to be your coach and mentor and examine you and basically test you as you go along in the learning journey. It's going to blow your mind if you've not done that before. So I think that's a great practical point.
I'm gonna tie it all together. So you're gonna get pressure from the board and advocates. If you're a public company, you're gonna get the C-suite is gonna give you pressure because they need to show to, you know, their shareholders and this and the street that you're AI enabled. There will be 1,000 opportunities raining down on you. Your people will start to play with it. They will enjoy it and see the power of it. There's going to be a lot of flowers blooming, like it or not. Some that are going to be endorsed by the top, some that are going to come from the middle. There are going to be a lot of good ideas. The one practical thing to tie it all together, I think, that stops most institutions today, in addition to the technology that I mentioned earlier being an issue, is the lack of that risk, AI risk office. Because if there isn't a structured, thoughtful way to gather the data, to prepare for all this, to articulate that, I think you'll find that the overarching risk committees of your organizations are just going to shut everything down or say, let's wait. And that's the last thing you want to do. You've got to be training people. You've got to be selecting the flowers that you want to water. You've got to be pushing back against the top that's saying we've got to have an announcement on AI. And I think that that risk committee, that AI risk committee, can really be the council that brings structure, thoughtful leadership to the organization and cools down the temperature when it comes to fear, but also allows some of those flowers to get watered and bloom. So that's my one recommendation.
There we go. Fantastic. All right. And with that, we're going to close the panel. Larry, Kathleen, Brian, thank you so much for joining us on stage. I hope for you all there were a lot of, wait a second. Oh, I like the power of the stage. I hope you guys liked the insights and the nuggets that the team shared here. You guys are going to be around for the morning session overall, right? So walk up to all of them and basically continue the dialogue. For now, I would say thanks for listening, and let's give a big round of applause to the team. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.